Namyadasiti vadinah.
Next one too.
Kamatmanasvarvaparaha. Jannakarmapalapradam.
Kriya-vishesha-bahulam.
Bhogaishvarya-gatim-prati.
You're seeing who's here. Mm-hmm. Okay. If we take these two verses together, 42 and 43. Yam imam pushpitam vachan pravadanti avipaschitaha veda Vada Rataha Harata Na Anyat Asti Iti Vadinaha Kama Atmanaha Swarga Paraha Janma Karma Pala Pradam Kriya Vishesha Bahulam Bhogai Bhoga Aishwarya Gatim Prati. For those who are learning Sandhi. Okay. Pravadanti avipaschitaha. That negates. Right, or an often negates the noun. This noun is vipaschitta. Vipaschitta means the one who have clarity. They're very clear about what they're doing. The avipaschitta means not so clear. They don't have clarity in reference to this issue. But in this case, the people that are being talked about here, as we'll see, are the Vaidikas. The people have tremendous shraddha and understanding of the Vedas in the whole, as a whole. But their karmis, their karmanishtas, means their devotion is to karma, which means to the first portion of the Vedas, which really means for someone who is devoted to karma. Remember the whole Vedas of, I don't know if all of you are aware of this, but if we look at the Vedic scriptures in India, the Vedas are divided into two parts. The first part is really big. Many volumes like this, and the second part is like this. This is us. this is the Vedanta, the end of the Vedas, because it only has one vision. It has one thing to say. So in each one of the four Vedas, there may be, you know, a handful of Upanishads, you know, all approaching the same knowledge from a different standpoint. But the first portion of the Vedas is called the Karmakanda. This is the Jnanakanda, that section that deals with knowledge. And that's comprised of the Veda Anta, the end of the Vedas, the Vedanta. Right? Veda Anta. Anta means end. So the end of the Vedas is the Vedanta. The Vedanta is comprised of the Upanishads. So the Vedanta is both the teaching methodology for unfolding the Upanishads. It comprises it. So we look at Vedanta as a spiritual discipline or whatever. We just say Vedanta. But it also is referring to the Upanishads, which are the Vedic texts located at the end of the Vedas, which themselves are the teaching methodology in the form of the Guru-Sisha relationship. So in every one of the Upanishads, there is a teacher, a rishi, who is teaching their Sishas or Sisha. Right? So it's a dialogue between the teacher and the student. And the teacher is unfolding this knowledge in a particular way. And that methodology has been passed down. It's called the Sampradaya, the passing down of this teaching methodology that is still with us today. So the each Upanishad is really a dialogue, a way of making the student see with the vision of the Upanishads. So what we're doing is the Vedanta. The Adhikari, the qualified student for the Vedanta, is the Mumukshu. In fact, in the Brahma Sutras, at the Atato Brahma Jignasa, it's the first sutra. It means now therefore, the desire to know Brahman. The desire for who? Who is the qualified student? Who is the one who wants to know Brahman, is qualified to undertake this study, this to become involved in this guru-sisha, this teacher-student relationship, in order to attain this understanding. And Shankara, and the commentary, Vyasa, and then Shankara's commentary, says, the mumukshu. That's it, the mumukshu. The mumukshu can be from anywhere in the world, can be a man or a woman, can be of any age where the reason is there, it can be of any caste. In terms of the caste system, sometimes I think only the brahmanas can receive this knowledge, only men can receive this knowledge. That's the most common, the brahmanas and the men. They go first brahmanas, and then if we extend it a little bit, men. But that is not what the Shastra says. The Shastra says anyone who is a mumukshu, which is so the qualified student who is the one who has really recognized, understood the problem, the issue, and that through their assimilation of experience, and that person will find a teacher, and with that teacher, that's just part of the universal order, that teacher, there will be this exchange of knowledge. Okay. So that's the Vedanta. The Vedas, and called Jnana Khandari, Jnana means knowledge, so that section of the Vedas that has for its tatparya, its essence, its essential teaching, is Atma Jnana. Brahma-jnanam, that's what it is. But the first part of the Vedas is dealing with this universe and what goes on within it. And so in this unfoldment of the Karmakanda, what the Karmakanda deals with first is the description of the whole universe, all of the different lokas, the different levels of experience that we can have, and Swargaloka being the highest, and then hell levels. And also the Dharma. How can I be in this world with the least amount of pain and the most amount of joy? What are my duties? What are the duties for me as a human being in this world in order to just enjoy a natural shanti, to be in harmony, Bhagavan, with the whole? Then there are also karmas, like we call kamya karmas, that I can do, rituals that I can do, that are told in the Vedas with great detail, rituals I can do in order to achieve and help to achieve my desires, the highest desire that we need to go to Swargaloka. But it could be the desire to have a family or to get a new job or for the rains to come so my crops can grow. There are so many different types, very specific rituals that can be done in order to fulfill this desire, that whatever it may be. And in fact, just a little aside here, when last time I was in India, I happened to have a student who was a little older and was having difficulty. She really so badly wanted to have a child, she and her husband, who so badly wanted to have a child. And it just was not happening. They really, really tried to do it. And so she came to me and we were talking about it. And I said, maybe we should ask the sisters, you know, in Coimbatore Ashram to do a ritual for you. Because I know it's called Putra Kameshti. Those who have a desire, you know, a desire for a child. You know, there are very specific rituals for that in the Karmakanda. And these, I don't know, for those of you who have been to Coimbatore, then you know these two sannyasinis, these two women sannyasinis who really have so much Shraddha at the temple. They're just the embodiment of Shraddha. And every day without missing, they'd have to be very sick to miss. You know, they are there every day in the morning chanting and doing all of the prayers and pujas along with the pujaris and others, you know, for the temple and for the Dakshinamurti and then for Ganesha and then for Nandi and then for Shiva in the form of the Linga and then for Jnaneshwari. If they do all of this, it takes about 2 hours. In fact, when I'm there, I always go usually for the hour and a half or two hours because it's so beautiful and so absorbing. They've been doing this every day for maybe 20 years, ever since the temple came up. And this temple was brought up really so... In the construction of the temple and bringing in the deity, all of the Vedic mandates were followed completely to the T. All of the proper rituals were done, and the deity, the Murti, was carved according to all the traditional specifications for all the Murtis there. They were all installed according to tradition, and the prana was evoked into each Murti. And then the Murtis have all been treated properly, lavishly, in fact, beautifully, from the beginning. And so this temple is now gaining a reputation around India to have a very strong presence and a very strong healing presence. So actually, people are starting to visit this temple just for those blessings. And I feel that blessing when I'm sitting in the temple and all the chanting is going on, and at the end when the puja is finished and the prasad is being handed out, there is like a rain of punya. You can feel it, you know, you can feel the presence. So I was thinking, and I told my student, you know, why don't we ask these two swaminis to do this, some special pujas, you know, so that you can carry this child, you can become pregnant and carry this child. They are the embodiment of Shraddha. So when I told them the situation, and the student wrote a little, all of the information, all of her birth date and her partner's birth date, everything, wrote down everything. And so the two swaminis said, yes, we'll do, don't worry. And then she was thinking about it over the couple of days, and she came back and she said, we will do it here, but there's a very, very special... There's a very special temple, you know, in the south that kind of specializes in this, and it has so much power and strength. And there's some very specific rituals and things that we can do there. So don't worry. And there's one other place that they are going to go there. Do it here at our temple and then go to this place. And then there's one other place. I don't remember the details. One other place that they were going to go. So don't worry. She will have a child. She will have a child. No problem. Okay, so then some months passed, and when I came back to India and I reported back to the swaminis, you know, swaminis, she has not been able to have a child yet. How many months has it been? I said, it's been like 6 months or so, you know, since they started. Don't worry, it takes some time. She will have a child. Tell her. You tell her. She will have the child. So I tell the Swamiji. Yeah. I told her, the Swamiji said, you will have the child. Don't give up. You don't give up. So then what happened, I told her that that's exactly what they said. And she said, okay. And there were some vibhuti and things and water. So she splashed herself. So she just kept doing it. And then she became pregnant and shortly thereafter had a miscarriage. And so she came and told me, and I said, okay, let me see. Let me talk to them. And so I was back in India, and I was in India quite a bit because of Swamiji's illness. So this is in a similar time. So I went back and I told that the Swamiji's, you know, she did become pregnant, but she had a miscarriage. And she said, don't worry. Sometimes this takes a little bit of time. It can take 1 year or more. It can take some time. You don't worry. She will have her child. I have no doubt of this. She will have her child. I promise you, she will. I'm positive. So both swamis felt this way, and then they continued, and she said she'll do a few extra things, but she continued. And then I got, some months later, I got a note. I'm pregnant, or I think she's actually had her baby. She said, I want you to know I become pregnant, and I did have my baby. You know, so I wrote the sisters. And so beautiful, you know, so beautiful. Because honestly, there was not, her sankalpa was so certain that perhaps that sankalpa alone would be enough. She had not a shred of doubt. And not a shred of doubt. She's so certain. That's her shraddha also for that temple. And that temple is very, very beautiful. But, I mean, it's unspeakably beautiful, actually. You know, the essence, the bhava that's there, you know. But I think that they're very responsible for some of that beauty, that presence, because of the shraddha with which they do. But anyway, that's a little aside. So in the Karmakanda really has to do with, there are many, many rituals. There's enjoined rituals. They're called the nitya karmas, dhammitika karmas, different karmas and rituals. In fact, Vedic rituals, fire rituals that you at one time now were really enjoined to do on a daily basis, these various Agnihotra and various fire rituals. On a daily basis, those are called nitya, you know, nitya, right? Continual. Nitya means timeless from our perspective, but in as an adverb it can mean, you know, ongoing. It means daily. In naimittika karmas, karmas and rituals that are supposed to be done on special occasions, like when your child has its first teeth, for instance, or when it's 7 years old, or when you're married. All of these are, you know, Vedic rituals. And then it spends a lot of time discussing dharma and what you need to do to get to heaven and have the best life possible, how to treat your mother and father, how to treat your children, how to treat your mate, your partner. All of these things are really spelled out. It's a Dharma Shastra also, you know. And so the Vaidikas, those people, they're not just, I would say, ordinary samsaris. They're people of tremendous shraddha. But their shraddha is contained within the creation. And so for them, it is the words of the Vedas, the Karmakanda, the first portion of the Vedas, that hold the reality and will tell you everything that you need to know. How to behave, what rituals to do just on a daily basis, on an occasional basis, what rituals to do if you want to fulfill your desires, what rituals to do if you, they're called prayaschitta, you know, in order to negate things that you've done wrong, different papas you've done, rituals to help neutralize those. And so for them, they are totally encased in the world of the Vedas, the Vedic reality, the Vedic world. And they use the Vedas to help them fulfill all of their desires. Also, besides Dharma, they're all Dharmanishtas, because the Vedas is a Dharma Shastra, really. So they're following all of that, but they're using the Vedas to fulfill their desires, with the highest desire meaning getting to Swargaloka. And the other kinds of desires, there are very special, specific rituals that are done in order to fulfill those desires. So here, what they say is, these people, they're avipaschittaha, because they don't know the entire Veda. They only know the Karmakanda. They don't know, if they use the Vedanta at all, the only verses from the Veda as kind of blessings to the ritual that they're doing. And so they don't know the Tatparya, nor are they mumukshus. So they're not mumukshus desiring for Ananda, they're karmanishtas or kamanishtas. They are committed to fulfilling their desires. So here he says, the avipaschittahas, they're lacking in that complete clarity. They are speaking, so pravadanti avipaschittaha. These avipaschittaha, these people who are lacking in that, avipaschits, avipaschittaha is in plural, so these avipaschits, who are lacking in the complete clarity, they are speaking. Vad means to speak. Pravad means they are speaking very well, very clearly, with lots of shraddha and emotion and beauty, they are speaking the imam pushpitam vacham, very flowery words. Very flowery words, you know. They themselves, Veda Vada Rataha, they themselves are reveling. They're reveling in the words of the Veda. Rata means reveling. So Veda Vada, the words. Veda Vada Rataha. These avipaschits, they're reveling in the words of the Veda. They are speaking with such flowery, such flowery words as they revel. And hey, Partha, he says, and for them, these vadinahas, their firm resolve, their firm understanding. It's like if you're a committed Catholic, you have certain firm beliefs. If you're committed in Judaism, firm beliefs. If you're committed Buddhist, very firm beliefs. When you say a person is a vadin, it means that they have their own set of philosophical beliefs that they're committed to. So these avipaschits are vadins. So these vadinaha, these people, what do they say? Na anya asti iti. There is nothing else but this. This is the truth. This is what you need to know, and this is as much as you can do. Moksha is swargaloka. Your moksha is gaining, going to heaven, and staying there until the end of the kalpa, you know, and being with Brahmaji. If there's any, they might say, if there's any Vedanta to be gotten, Brahmaji will give it to you when you're up in Swargaloka. I'm just adding that. Okay. Because I'm adding it just to give them that opportunity. But what Swamiji says, you know, or what the Vedas actually say, is that Atmajnanam, self-knowledge, can be gained in this loka with great clarity. This loka, this world, the nature of the buddhi has clarity, and you have kartritvam, doership, you know, knowership, free will. You can gain atmajnanam in this loka. All of the other lokas, except for swargaloka, are more dreamlike, where there really is not much kartritvam, doership. It's really just you're living out some experiences, up and down. You're living out in these lokas. It's more like a dream in the sense they're objective, but nevertheless, you're more living out a series of experiences, exhausting karma. Then in the Swarga loka, the highest loka, you have the ability there to gain Atmajnanam, and you can sit at the feet of Brahmaji, feet of the Lord, in reference to that loka, and gain knowledge. But then Swamiji will say, you know, it's really hard to get there. It's very difficult to get to Swargaloka. It takes maybe lifetimes of commitment, but at least in this lifetime, it would take a very highly committed life full of upasana and also full of ritual and upasana and many, many karmas that you have to do. So it's a very, very dedicated life. And then chances are you will not get there. The whole life is going to be centered on that, and then chances are you may be able to get to Brahmaloka. So they go on how difficult it is to get there. So the idea is, why not, if you can get it here, why not just get it here? I want Brahmaji to teach. Well, okay, good luck to you then. That's the idea. So, hear what it says. So these avipaschits, who are reveling in the Veda and speaking many flowery words, they say there is nothing other than this. The Vedanta really is just used as praise. That's all. Then they are kamaatmanaha. Kamaatmanaha. These people, their self, like Swamiji says in his commentary, it's not that they have desires, they are desires. Their nature is kama, is desire. This is my desire, how do I fulfill this? This is my desire, this is my desire. And ultimately my desire is swargaloka. So the Vedas become the shastra that is meant to fulfill my desire. So kamaatmanaha. With the highest desire, swarga paraha. the highest desire, para, being swarga, swargaloka. So then it says, janma karma palapradam kriya vishesha bahulam. And these Vedas, they are these flowery words, these Vedas themselves that are filled with the flowery words, they have bahula, many very particular vishesha kriyas, very, very many very particular karmas, some of which janma karma palapradam will give you the karma pala, the result of your actions, which is a better birth, the janma, that the birth that you take as a result of these rituals will be an exalted birth. Like say you want in your next life to be exalted in a particular way. Maybe you want to be, you know, exalted in your panditim, or maybe you want to be exalted in that you're a great singer, or that you're a great dancer or jyotisha. Maybe you're one of the top jyotishas in the world. You're praying for some sort of an exalted birth, exalted upadhi. So there are karmas for that. And then there are particular karmas, again, this kriya vishesha bahulam, bhoga aishwarya gatim prati, that will lead you to the gati, means that will result in, you say that gati, gatim prati, that will, they will result in bhogas, enjoyments, and aishwarya, power. Aishwarya means power. And so there is always a hierarchy of power. Swamiji is the example. This is, that was cute. A policeman has power, some power over the drivers in traffic. They can pull you over and give you a ticket, etc. So they have their own little power. They can, you know, shove you around a little bit, okay? But then the police inspector has power over those policemen, so he can boss them around a little bit. He's got some power. And the hierarchy goes up and up and up and up and up. And so we, in any walk of life, really, in any type of job, there's some sort of a hierarchy. And the aishwarya, the amount of power you have, goes on increasing. You can have more control over more people as you rise up, apparently. That's the idea. Also, money gives you that aishwarya. The more money you have, the more you buy your power. So people want enjoyments, but they also want to be often respected. Now, how do you view respect? You can view, this is one way people view respect. I have a lot of money, I have a lot of power. You know, I can basically do what I want, and I can basically do what I want with you. You know? So that aishwarya, there's a positive side to it. Ishwara has absolute aishwarya. But that aishwarya is something that's used for the benefit of all beings, for the whole creation. But there's other types of aishwarya that are on the darker side. You know? It's the same with everything. Anything in duality, there's all sorts of enjoyments. Some enjoyments are beautiful, and they're sattvic, you know. And they bless you. It's very enjoyable and beautiful, like when you're singing bhajans, or it doesn't have to be religious. There's some things that are very beautiful and enjoyable, like hiking through that, through the fairyland of the forest we went into. So beautiful. But there's other types of enjoyments that are actually very dark and destructive. So there's a whole gamut, you know. So for those people who are after bhoga and aishwaryam, because they're vaidikas, we'll say, we'll look at it positively, that's what I seek. They say, you know, some of the main things that a samsari will seek, one is power, one is enjoyment, money, and one is progeny. You seek progeny, you seek power, and you seek bogus. They divide this up in different ways, but this is one of the ways that it's divided up. So these things are what it said here. So that being the case, when we're looking from the previous verse, the karma yogi is a mumukshu who has this vivasayatmika buddhi. It means single-pointed. There's only one thing I want. I want moksha, and for moksha, I need karma yoga. I need antakarana shuddhi. It's not that the antakarana shuddhi gives moksha. It doesn't give moksha, but it gives the mind that is necessary to gain moksha. And so it becomes the what we call Upayanishta. And the Upayanishta, we had just briefly mentioned this in the other day, the Upayanishta really is Antakarana Shuddhi and the means for getting it, that purity of mind and the means for getting it, which is basically Karma Yoga. Right? Everything else is like a band-aid. Pranayama is like a band-aid because it's very, very powerful, but it lasts as long as you do it. Yoga is a band-aid, very powerful, wonderful, lasts as long as you do it. You know, but Karma Yoga is not a band-aid in the sense that it's an attitude that you have. Of course, it becomes a band-aid if it's just a temporary attitude. Oh, you try a little Karma Yoga. But if you're a mumukshu, Karma Yoga is a natural expression of that mumukshutvam also, when you understand it. So you have to remember that when you're a mumukshu, it means you're also studying the shastra. A mumukshu, taking either the life of Karma Yoga or the life of sannyasa, you're studying the shastra, you're recognizing your own nature, you're understanding the source of ananda, and now you have Karma Yoga, which makes so much sense in light of understanding the truth of your own nature, that the ananda is not an object in the world to be attained, but the ananda is my own being. And when that's the truth, when I've seen that, what do I get out of raga dvesha except a lot of problems? Because it's an illusion. I'm running after myself that's been projected out on the world. And so how is that going to bless me? It's not. It just is a distraction, basically. And so as I understand that, then what really becomes meaningful for me is that Karma Yoga, where I am present to what is, I'm present to Ishwara, I do what is there to be done. If I have desires that come rise up within Dharma, I do those, but I take everything that is done as with all the results of my action as prasad, that prasada buddhi. So my mind isn't going to be ripped up, you know, and shredded by my disappointments, because I don't have any disappointments. There's no disappointment. The disappointment is if I have to have this to be happy. But there's no disappointment, you know. There's no disappointment in my accepting things as prasad, because it doesn't matter what that is. It could be a drop of water. And that drop of water is from Bhagavan, you know. Or it could be some luxurious thing. That's beautiful too, it's from Bhagavan. But there's no difference for me, really, between the drop of water and the formula. It doesn't matter in terms of how I receive it. So that's why my mind is so much the mind of a jnani. It's just abiding in myself, and recognizing all of this as Ishwara, including this body-mind-sense organs. That kartritvam for the jnani is not really there. It's there, it's only as mithya, the sense of doership and all of this. That's not there. The self is Ishwara, the universe is Ishwara, there's only Ishwara. I am Ishwara. Means I am Brahman, I am the self from which this whole creation comes, I'm Ishwara. So where is there any, there's not room for anybody else. There's only Ishwara. That's the jnani. But for the karma yogi, all of this is Ishwara. All of the actions I do, because that kartritvam has not resolved yet, because my knowledge has not had a chance to mature. And so until that matures, my knowledge matures and there's only Ishwara, until then, you know, all that I do and all that I want, I take all of the results of my actions with that prasada buddhi, and I do all of my actions with that shraddha as a puja, that same heart. It's a puja to Bhagavan. And that means that's a beautiful, when you start, that's worthy really of just kind of contemplating on. That means because then everything you do to everyone, it's to Ishwara. So every being is Ishwara. So everything, you should think then, whatever, if I do to this person, would I do it to Ishwara? Would I do that to my Ishta Devata? You know, would I do that to Bhagavan? It's a beautiful thought. Especially in terms of when you include the earth and the oceans and all beings. In India, they include in their psyche the bhutani. It means all beings. May I be kind to all beings, not just to human. Human beings are in the minority. They're just one being, one type of being. May I be kind to all beings. That's so, your whole psyche changes as you live that out, because we've been shut off from that reality that other beings are beings. They're just for us, they're just for our use, they're for our food, they're for our clothes, for our shoes and for our handbags and for our leather jackets. We don't even realize what we're doing, but we need to realize what we're doing, because as you realize and don't do any of those things anymore, your psyche changes. You know, just like if you stop putting your hand in fire, your hand will heal and not be burnt anymore. When you stop, when you become aware of what we're doing, you know, we're putting our psyche in the fire of what we're doing to all the living beings. When we stop doing that, there is a palpable change that takes place in your psyche. And it's so worth it. It is so worth it. It gives you so much inner shanti and inner peace. So it's something to contemplate on and to really think about and make firm resolve around these type of things, because you just have to understand that we've been very, very, we've been conditioned, so conditioned that we don't think about these things. We don't even know to think about them, you know. So we have to start thinking about it so that we can actually enjoy on the beautiful psyche that comes when we stop it and start caring, you know. You can even do, this is just, sorry, a little quick aside, but it's really moving. You know, little creatures, like little ants and these little bugs and things that crawl around, they're not little to themselves. They're not little to themselves. They live in their world. We say in their little world. It's not a little world to them, you know. I suppose our world is really a little world to some other species, you know. They're looking down on us. We could be little tiny, tiny worms, you know, but not to us. We're not little to ourselves. And these little beings, they're little to us. They're not little to themselves. To themselves, they have a life. You know, they have a life. They have families. They have friends. And that's real. It's as real for them as it is for us. You know, that's the thing. We have to start thinking, you know. We think, well, they don't have as much intelligence. They have a different kind of intelligence. It's not about much, it's about different. Even animals, they don't have the same intelligence and the same things that we do. They do different things, and they far excel us in many, many ways, you know. And we excel them in some ways too. But we only count the ways that we excel as the way that counts. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? So this type of sensitivity, you know, I honestly say it's mandatory. It is mandatory. It's not like you can say, oh no, I'll do everything but that. No. This you have to really think about, because it makes such a huge difference in terms of your own shanti. It really does. And to really understand that, you just have to do it for a while and you see. If you're not vegan yet, then I would really study it and figure out why. And figure out what is going on with what's happening to those animals and to those living creatures. And the more you study, the more you absolutely cannot do it. You can't do it. I know, I mean, I've realized over the last few years that I can barely give a class without harping on this. But Swamiji was the same way. And I used to think, oh, it just kind of embarrassed me. Because, you know, he'd be giving class to Westerners, he'd be, you know, in the States, and he'd be giving these yajnas and talks. And there was never a time in a given yajna talk series that something would not trigger this type of a talk. Because he couldn't help it. Because even though we're not as awake to this as we should be, the fact is we should be, you know. And so he was kind of the person going around, ah, you know, wake up here. You know? So it's something to actually take seriously. It makes us as a mumukshu, as a spiritual seeker, somebody who wants moksha, who wants that antakarana shuddhi. You have to wake up to this so that you can be part of the human community. The human and non-human community. The community of all beings. You know, and have some, let your compassion extend that far, which is not far. We think it's far. It is not far. It's what is normal and what is right. We just don't know it. We've been brought up in a different way. So that's the thing. Okay, let's do that next page.
Bhogaishvarya prasattanam taya pahrita cetasam vyavasayatmika buddhih samadhauna vidhiyate.
Boga Aishwarya Prasaktanam Taya Aparita Chaitasam Vyavasayatmika Buddhihi Samadhyau Na Vidhiyate. Boga Aishwarya Prasaktanam, genitive plural, for those who are prasakta, very committed to, very attached to, boga, enjoyment and overlordship, you know, power. Boga aishwarya prasaktanam, for those people, taya apahrita cetasam, whose mind for them, and again, genitive plural, so adjective, these two together. So for them, whose mind is apahrita, has been robbed away. The mind has been stolen away, you know, shuffled away by these flowery words. Taya, feminine in the instrumental. So the mind, for those whose mind has been taken away by all of these flowery words, those people who are prasakta, very attached to boga and aishwarya, whose mind has been stolen away, aparita, taken away, you know, maybe seduced away, aparita, stolen, captured by all of these flowery words, for those people, vyavasayatmika buddhi, the single-pointed buddhi, the buddhi that has clarity, and the buddhi that is clear, that knows what it wants, for that person, samadhyau na vidhiyate, such a buddhi cannot be there, samadhyau, in the mind. Here, samadhi means just in the mind. Samadhi can mean that state of absorption. It doesn't mean that here. Everything, if it comes into your buddhi, here, the buddhi itself, for these type of people, is not capable. This type of clarity cannot come into that mind. It can't have it. So, looking for this one thing. Because in this verse 41, Bahushaka Yanantaha Buddhiyaha Avyavasayinam. For them, for those who don't have that clarity, right? For them, their commitments, their buddhis, it's not one, their commitments are many and varied. They're multi-branched. So sometimes you have a problem. Now, I want to do this, and I want to do this, and I need to do this. What is the order? Which one should I do first? How should I divide up my time? You know, should I do this? An hour a day? And then try to accomplish this another hour a day? Even as mukshus, we have this problem. How much should I study Sanskrit? How much time should I spend chanting? You know? But this is benign. They say, isn't to be a mukshu, it means the one who has to desire for moksha? Desire, right? Desire has lots of problems. And now with that desire, there's all of these tools that we need to get, and so naturally I want all of these things too. That's our little bahushaka. You know, those are all of our branches. But But all of these branches that we're struggling with are in service of the same vision, the Antakarana Shuddhi and Jnana Nishtha. So everything that I do is in order to gain the Antakarana Shuddhi and the clarity so that I can have this moksha. And so that even though there's many aspects to my study and I'm dividing my day up and all this kind of stuff, it's all for one purpose. Not only that, you're also really busy in your life. You may be married and you have children and you have your job and you have all these responsibilities and traveling around like gypsies and all kinds of stuff is going on that you're having to continually handle. But none of it is primary. All of it is only what is primary in all of the field that I find myself in is my Antakarana Shuddhi and my Jnana. Everything is, every moment is really sadhana. It's either Ishwara or it's sadhana. When it's Ishwara, then there's no jiva's head is popping up. Right? So it's either Ishwara or there's a problem. The problem is sadhana. You know? And so I have to live, you have to walk around, you have a body, you have responsibilities, everyone does. Look at Swamiji. I mean, Puja Swamiji was, so much. You know, but it was all Ishwara for him. He was just doing what is there, what is there, what is there, what is there, and non-stopping, what is there, what is there, what is there, doing. But there was nobody there complaining, you know. He's like that even when he was so sick for so long. The sickness is done. You know, ping. But that's what was Bhagavan. There was nobody complaining. He was just was. And if there was a complaint or a problem for him, immediately it would be sadhana. He would resolve it immediately into himself before he even could take a breath. You know? That's it, Jnana Nishtha. So for us also, the whole world is just sadhana. We resolve it as it is when the problem is there. We just accept it, and as prasad, you accept these hurtful things and reactions that we have and the way that we can be critical or all of these things. You accept all of them as prasad because if it comes up, it's there. Right? If it comes up, it's there to come up. So now this is what Bhagavan's giving me to deal with because what is primary for me is moksha. So for me to really have that moksha in my mind to fully enjoy my own being, to have that clarity, Bhagavan says, well, you know, your mind's running around this way here. Let's give it to you. Take this problem. This is your next problem to deal with until that one I'm free of that. It's like this problem, whatever it was, it now has a right to be. This person is a problem to me, now has a right to exist. As Ishwara, you have as much right to be and to live your life and to do what is to be done as every other being on this planet, as Bhagavan, you know? Then you've done your work. And so then Bhagavan will figure out another harder problem for you. Mm-hmm. And you say, oh, no. I thought I was doing really well, and now he's saying these hard things. That's how it is, though. Until basically anything that is there is solved as it comes up. And already there are many, many things like that for you. You don't even notice them anymore. As they come up, they're solved. You notice the ones that are, you have some pushback. So that's your sadhana. It's no problem. Very, 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 very nice when you have that karma yoga attitude, prasad. This is my challenge, it's my prasad. Bhagavan decided this is the one that I need to deal with now. Something very wonderful about that.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Namaha Hari Om.